This podcast is brought to you by Lanco Group, your business partner for engineering solutions. You are listening to FNR Football Nation Radio.
It's time for the lightning round on FNR Football Nation Radio.
I don't know if we've ever had so much to talk about on an edition of the Lightning Round. The Matildas coming back from two goals down to defeat the arch rivals Brazil 3-2. Sam Kerr courting controversy post-match. We've got a new marquee signing in the A-League. MPL news, big games coming up on the weekend, and a whole lot of transfer rumours. Nick DiBarno, what a week.
What a week, and you haven't even touched on all the other exciting stuff we're going to be talking about, Josh, because as promoted on Twitter, this is arguably the biggest lightning round ever.
Yeah, and this is going a little bit off script from some of the things you got here.
This is extremely off the cuff. We're talking Kawhi. We're talking Raptors. We're talking Ange Postecoglou to Greece. We're talking Copa America. We're talking Frank Ribery to Sheffield United.
We're talking Nelly Yoa security details.
We're talking TLL. We're talking everything. This is arguably the biggest one ever. Now, let's start off with this morning's game, because that's the big thing. Matildas Brazil. I'm ashamed in myself that I fell asleep on the couch 2 minutes into the game. I am so ashamed. I watched the full replay, so I saw what happened. I've seen it. That's the main thing. But in myself, being an Australian, I'm so ashamed that I fell asleep 5 minutes into the game and I missed the entire game. I woke up at quarter past four and I was like, what's just happening? You know, and you're all clueless and delusional and that. And you wake up and you're like, what's going on here? Game was over. And I'm like, oh, we won. That's great. Like, we won. So it was happy watching the replay this morning. But let's start off. Turning point. Yes, no. Is this it? Are we back?
Nick, I'm ashamed for you. Because you didn't go through the emotional turmoil that we all did. Shout out to the real ones on Twitter who were awake for this one and just sharing in the drama, the doubt, the ecstasy, the stress. I said on Twitter I'd slept 15 minutes before the game and I aged about 15 years over the course of it. But thankfully, you know what's a really great skincare remedy to take those extra wrinkles off?
Brazilian tears.
Brazilian tears. It's the new cosmetic craze sweeping the nation.
You know those like ads on Facebook? It's like this new cosmetic craze has like dermatologists,
I'm thinking of starting up an Instagram, you know, startup. I can be an influencer for this product because, you know, I believe in it. Bathing in Brazilian tears is the most regenerative remedy, and especially Barbara is the goalkeeper, because let's not forget, maybe the Matildas got a bit lucky with those refereeing decisions. You know, maybe that offside goal, I think it's technically, you know, we'll get into it. I think it's technically in the law, but it's maybe a stupid law. But let's not forget she was about 4 or 5 metres off her line during that penalty shootout in 2016.
The Olympics, so, yeah. Well, no one's forgotten about that.
This is karmic retribution, and I think even though there are various question marks still remaining over this Matildas team, just emotionally, this is going to be so powerful for this group. We know so many nations start slowly at World Cups and then they hit the form at the right time. I have renewed optimism and faith in this squad, because how could you not after that comeback?
You've hit the nail on the head. Now, I had my concerns after the game against Italy, and I thought if they lose, this is it. That there was no chance that even if they got through as a third place team, they'd come out and beaten Jamaica, that they'd be put in the wrong side of the draw. They'd gotten through and come up against the powerhouse. It would not have been happy viewing. But right now, with Italy playing Jamaica tomorrow, Australia is still technically in the hunt now for a top spot in the group. That is the true facts that come out of this game, depending on what happens in their game against Jamaica tomorrow morning. But it is a turning point. No matter how you get the job done at the end of the day in the most scrappy way possible, I'm not going to say the word of something S-word housery in the best way possible. That was the purest form of it. But at the end of the day, they got the job done. Very proud of them. And to sum it up, with all that VAR controversy about should the own goal have counted, look, as we said, we talk about good karma. And after that diabolical situation, the penalty shootout, the Olympics, even though maybe technically when you look at it all, maybe it shouldn't have counted. But if it was an apparent offside, Sam Kerr wasn't actually involved in that play whatsoever. The ball was going to her, but she didn't touch it. She didn't get involved in the play. It came off the centre back and it was in. Sam Kerr was in an offside position, but at the end of the day, she didn't get involved.
I want to refer you to this tweet from Michael Cayley, great presence on Twitter, big stats man. He says, welcome to the bizarre instruction that an action taken defending a player who is offside doesn't qualify as offside unless you physically contact the body of the offside player. So that means that Sam Kerr, basically, she has to translate that into English for you. She has to be in touching distance of the defender to qualify as being interfering with the play. She has to be either making an obvious attempt to play at the ball or obstructing an opponent from getting to the ball. There are a number of instances. It goes into a very lengthy. I've read the entry in IFAB this morning. It's not offside. I think it should be. I think the law is wrong because, let's be honest, Monica, the Brazilian central defender, she's never going for that ball if Sam Kerr's not there.
Of course.
Same thing happened in the A-League semi-final, obviously 6-1. It doesn't really rate a mention. But Lee Broxham's own goal, yeah. Ryan Grant's behind him in offside position. He never goes for that ball if Ryan Grant's not in
so
an
you
offside
think that
position.
That has to be more,
I think that has to be changed? Amended, yep. But I'm perfectly happy to be the beneficiary of this stupid bylaw that IFAB's decided upon. And, you know, she's not interfering play because she was merely behind the defender, not within a distance where she could actually, you know, touch or push or, you know, prevent her from getting to that ball. So it's not offside. Sorry, Brazil. Sorry, Marcia. I know you went on a 15-minute rant at the referee after the game. It's too bad.
That's the cruel nature of world football sometimes.
As Sam Kerr might say, suck on that one, Brazil.
Exactly. And we'll talk about that one a little bit later. There were a few penalty calls and non-calls. I felt that the Brazil penalty might have been very soft. Mm. I felt like if they weren't going to pay the Australian one, how could you pay the Brazil one? In my view, it was a soft penalty. Very, very soft penalty.
I think it was a pen. I think there was a shout for handball, but the Brazilian player only handled it because she was pushed in the back before, so it actually forced her into the ball. And then if you see the steal of it, Kellen Knight actually grabs a piece of a shirt. You can't do that. The defender's beyond you. It's not, and the attacker's beyond you. It's not shoulder to shoulder. She's directly behind her. Any contact is really a foul. She went down easily. She made the most of it. It's a penalty. There was another call up the other end just beforehand. VAR has changed the game so much. It's insane. I mean, so much so that David Beshear on the commentary, when Brazil was awarded a penalty, he didn't say penalty for Brazil. He said, that's going to be reviewed. That was his first reaction.
It happens all the time now. Even in anything when it comes now with any score review is that whenever there's immediate sense of doubt, they immediately say, we're going to review it. Like the commentators now don't have any, they might be a penalty call, but within 5 seconds, they'll say it like, the referee's called for a penalty, but that's going to be reviewed. Mm. They don't say definitively
there's
what it's going to be.
There's no definitive calls anymore, it seems. But Tamika Yallop was fouled, obviously.
Yeah.
But she did handle the ball before that. So that is part of the review process. And she didn't have a problem with it. Under the new handball rule, if you're making your silhouette, so to speak, unnaturally larger.
She knew. She knew.
And she had her hands sort of up here. You know, she didn't have time to react. It's not ball to hand or it's ball to hand or hand to ball. But she had her arms out. She had no problem with the call. So I think the referees within a difficult game, a lot of difficult decisions, got mostly right. Although I have to say special mention for the 5th minute of stoppage time where Steph Catley nearly gave me a coronary. She wrestled a Brazilian player to the ground. Apparently no one was watching. Didn't go to VAR. Who cares? 3 points. Go Matildas.
Couldn't have summed it up any better. They got the win. That is what, at the end of the day, it doesn't matter how you get it, get the job done. When you look back at the Women's World Cup and you see the 3 points are on the board, that's what everyone's going to be talking about, not the manner in how you do it. You can win 1-0 with a crap tap in or whatever it might be, but at the end of the day, 3 points is 3 points. Ante Milicic made a couple changes. Obviously, one was forced. Claire Polkinghorne, in particular, out with an injury. Did he make the right moves? Does the result at all vindicate him? Because in my view is he's still under a lot of pressure. I still think there's a lot of questions to be asked. I think that he's not entirely out of the woods just yet.
No, I would agree. I think he's made some changes on the back of the criticism and on the back of his own analysis of what went wrong against Italy. You saw the line wasn't as aggressive in pushing up quite so high in that game. They were giving themselves a little bit more room for error. You know, I agree with the philosophy, but, you know, sometimes if the defenders aren't totally in sync, if there's not enough pressure on the ball, then playing a high line is very dangerous. So he made that tactical adjustment. In terms of the selections, I think he actually got a little bit lucky in terms of that Lisa Devanna was under an injury cloud. She didn't play. Instead, he brought in Emily Gelnick. I think Devanna would have played if she was fit.
Yeah.
But Emily Gelnick had one of the games of her life, and she showed what she's all about. She is a physical threat. She is, you know, bustling, broad-shouldered, very quick. She can win those 50-50 duels, turn a turnover into an attack. and she was electric. I thought she was one of the best on the park along with Chloe Legazzo. And that physicality, that intensity, that was evident from the word go. Even in the first half when the Matildas conceded twice, they were putting so much pressure on the ball. They were so pumped up. Yallop, Legazzo, Gelnick running just so hard. So the effort and the intensity was there, and that was great to see.
Legazzo is like the Terminator, as you said. She doesn't stop. Like, she's unbelievable. Like, literally, the opponent will get past her for a second, but she will do everything to chase her back down because she was absolutely fantastic. I thought much better performance than what we saw against Italy where she was a bit off. But I thought that it was a great response from the majority of the players. Caitlin Ford moving out wide as well in some bits I thought was a better move. I prefer her out wide as well. I personally think that she plays her best football out wide.
I disagree.
You disagree?
I think Sam Kerr is better in that wide spot.
Really?
I like Caitlin Ford in the nine role. And you saw them switching throughout the match. And Australia actually had more openings when Sam Kerr was out wide because she's a little bit lost with her back to goal. She is much better if she can pick the ball up deep and run at the defence or even off crosses. We know she's such a presence in the air. She can blindside the defence if she's playing in that left wing role and cutting inside.
Yeah.
At Perth Glory, she never plays as a nine. Rachel Hill is the nine. She plays on the left wing and she cuts inside. And I think that's her best role. And we saw Caitlin Ford's fantastic awareness and movement with that goal in that number nine role towards the end of the first half where she got us back into the game. So I think the two of them switching kind of works and gives the defence some headaches, but I much prefer, if I have to choose one, Caitlin Ford as a striker, Sam Kerr playing a little bit deeper off the left.
Let's talk Sam Kerr. Let's talk about the comments. Mm. I loved it. I absolutely loved it. I don't think at all, no matter what the circumstance, I feel like I don't want to be Mr., you know, trying to be all controversial in this instance, but I feel like we're becoming a bit too sensitive these days.
Mm.
It was so lighthearted. When you look at it without watching the video, you might think it was very much and it was an aggressive comment. But she was laughing. She was just having a joke. She was just like, "Yeah, suck on that, whatever." That's Sam Kerr. That Sam Kerr is a bubbly personality, very outspoken, very outgoing. Loves to stir the pot, and we need more of that. As much as it's not like what we saw with how the Americans were counting 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 when they were 13-0 up against Thailand. This was just a passing comment where she literally just said, "All right, suck on that." They copped it for days. She had every right to come out and say something like that. And, you know, I feel like we've just become too soft.
I totally agree. I think a lot of the media types, some of them, you know, not really football media types who don't have the context, were getting all up in arms. They clearly didn't watch it. They clearly weren't up at that time. They just saw it in print and said, "Oh, what an unprofessional thing for the Matildas captain to say." Do you want players to act like robots with the press? Is that what you want?
That's literally what you're saying.
No,
that is literally what Australians, like we feel like we're getting a lot with because we don't just see it here.
Mm.
I compare this to so many other case studies in sport in Australia and I feel like it's becoming an issue. You look at, I know this is something that obviously a lot of Australians don't agree with, but Nick Kyrgios, right?
Mm.
The second he steps one step away from the Roger Federer archetype of straight, you know, just doesn't kick up a stink, doesn't show any emotion, wins a point, just a slight little fist pump. But Nick Kyrgios shows his personality. Yeah, sometimes he goes a bit too far. But all of a sudden, they're on his back. But when he wins, we forget about that because he's Australian. He's an Australian. Yeah. When he loses, he's a Greek-Australian brat, apparently.
Yeah.
When Sam Kerr says, "Suck on that," because she's a soccer player and everything else, automatically all the stereotypes start coming and everything else. But I'll tell you what, if that was, let's say, for instance, that "suck on that" comment was made by Trent Cotchin or Dustin Martin in the AFL, would they cop it?
People would be loving it.
They would absolutely froth it. Like, seriously, like, why is there so much hypocrisy? Like, this is what we need. We need more of this sort of stuff. We want personalities because you see, in other countries, in America, they do stuff like that. Like, yeah, America, like, that's great. Like, in the NBA,
that's what makes the NBA great because the players are personalities. They're not afraid to actually say what they're thinking in front of the media rather than reverting to this robotic, sterilized persona. I would say to all of those media critics who are saying Sam Kerr was disrespectful or unprofessional, your job depends on these players giving access and giving good quotes. That is what generates these talking points. That is why we love Sam Kerr. Keep being herself. And if she wants to use the doubters, the haters, as she called them, as motivation, even if it's an imagined thing that, you know, nobody believes in us, That's a very powerful motivating tool. Mm. So all power to her. I thought it was really funny. I loved it. And Sam Kerr, you do you.
Exactly right. And at the end of the day, she's bigger than what... she's not just a footballer. She's a personality. She's a human being above all of that. Mm. And everyone...
And it was in the heat of the moment straight after the game. It's not like she had a chance to think about it.
It's not like it was 2 days from now or something.
She was experiencing the emotions we all went through times 100 out on that field with the World Cup hopes hanging on the line. They were dead and buried at 2-0. They came back from the brink. Imagine the endorphins running through your body at that point.
100%.
Just give her a break. I mean, come on. It was funny.
Just calm, all right? Have a cafe. Just sit down, relax. As Rick, our good friend Rick D'Andrea would say, just calm, you know? Aspeth. Like, seriously, like, I think everyone just needs to relax a little bit.
Absolutely.
Like, seriously, like, what we do on the Lightning Round. We have a bit of fun. We don't care what we say. We say some dumb things sometimes. We've got dumb things we talk about all the time, but we have a laugh about it.
Exactly. And I think if you lose that degree of self-awareness, also those media critics who are hammering the team and the FFA and the coaching change and all just after one defeat, you know, if you want to dish it out but you can't take it, don't dish it out in the first place. Mm. You know, you're going to get a clap back. And that Sam Kerr, if you can't deal with that, then, you know, don't run your mouth in the first place.
Exactly right. Just one last one about this game. Polkinghorne, Devanna could be back for the next game against Jamaica. My view is if they're fit, I'd start Claire Polkinghorne only because they probably do need that defensive setup, probably back to what I think would be their best back four. Devanna, I don't think should start. I think should play a role off the bench.
Speaking of Milicic's selections, I think Polkinghorne has to come back in if she's fit because she's just such a leader there. And it caused a massive reshuffle in the team.
Yeah, Callan Knight.
Callan Knight played well at left back. But I think she's much better in midfield.
You want her back in that defensive midfield role.
I would want her in the holding midfield role. I think, I think it's got to be Van Egmond to drop out of the team if Polkinghorne's fit. The other player I would love to see in there is obviously Katrina Gorry. I think she could even play a role at six, but that doesn't seem to be, you know, on the agenda. Van Egmond is still a constant source of frustration. I mean, Ivan's come through on the comments saying one thing that frustrated me the whole game was Van Egmond's backwards and sideways passes. We could see all those through balls she could have played. She's a very predictable player, and she doesn't really have the defensive capacity to make up for it. So I just don't think she should be a starter in this team. If all are fit and firing, I would play Kellen Knight there, bring Polkinghorne back into the side and put Catley in her natural role, because even though she scrapped and she played really hard, Steph Catley is a left back, and she was beaten to the punch with that Christiana header.
Yeah.
Polkinghorne would have got there. So
of course.
Claire Polkinghorne, if she's fit, back straight back into the team for the Jamaica game, which is still a must win.
Yep.
Let's not forget. They're
so
not
no real
yet.
Chance to really rotate too much. You want to have your best 11 out
no,
there.
No, there isn't. I think Gelnick has to stay in as well. Yep. I thought she was exceptional. And that midfield duo of Yallop and Legazo, don't break that up, because they were just everywhere, box to box.
Yeah.
The intensity was fantastic, and they play some great passes as well. And obviously Legazo, whether she meant it or not, was rewarded with that goal. It was a dangerous ball in. So that's you create those openings and you get rewarded for it.
And by the time we come back next Friday, all the group games will be done. Just having a look at just each of the groups at the moment. Group A, France, Norway, Nigeria, South Korea is the top four. More than likely France to go through. The hosts, they're in a very good position. They play Nigeria and South Korea play Norway. I think Norway will be able to take out second spot. Should be... quite.
Would have thought so.
Yeah, I think they should be able to get the job done. Germany, Spain, China, South Africa in Group B. Very similar scenario there. Germany are all but through. They actually would take on South Africa next. I think they've almost become everyone's second favourite team, South Africa at the moment, and China take on Spain. So big game between China and Spain, really, to see who'll get second spot. But you think that maybe the third spot in that group might end up making their way to the next round.
And Japan, Scotland tonight is huge.
That is a
Japan
massive game.
Only got a point from their first game. Scotland lost. They're both good teams. They both want to go through. Obviously, some of the third-place teams go through, but with the group that tight, it's going to be tough. And then England-Argentina tomorrow morning. Yep. Let's not write that off as a contest. I don't know if it'll be a spectacle because Argentina just parked the bus hard against Japan. They'll probably do the exact same thing against England. But there's historical spite between those two countries, famously. New Diego Maradona documentary coming out.
Of course.
Just this week, I think. So, you know, that's always going to stoke the flames, and England-Argentina, great rivalry in international football. Great, great fixtures coming up. This Women's World Cup is delivering on all fronts. There's been some fantastic games.
It really is. And obviously as well tonight, Italy-Jamaica, big game as well for, obviously, we need to keep an eye on. Well, I think Italy are going to come away with the win. I must say before we move on, because I haven't spoken to you about Italy, but, you know, a lot of people were saying that Italy were, I don't know, I saw some stuff saying that they made Barbara Bonasea look good and everything else, but I must give Italy a lot of credit. They were very good, and I think that they're going to be a dark horse to potentially go deep. I think there's always one team at every World Cup and every tournament that does almost exceed expectations, and I have a feeling Italy could be one of those if they get an opportunity to top this group, which is almost looking quite good at the moment. If they can get the win tonight, you'd think that they would more than likely, depending on what happens against Brazil, top Group C.
Can you get your Italian media mates to stop spreading fake news about
Tancredi? Yeah, well, look, Tancredi, I wasn't happy with those comments.
He got them off the co-commentator on the Italian TV and didn't check him. I have actually looked into it. Francis Awaratifi, actually, on our behalf, has looked into it. There is a PFA agreement that says, you know, you got to play in a top league.
Yeah.
But if you apply, they just let you play wherever you want, which is the case for Avi Lewick and...
maybe it's more...
I should say, who's the other player who plays in Spain? Shidiak.
Shidiak.
So they asked to play in Spain. They were granted it. The European leagues are catching up fast. They're getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And they haven't always been fully professional. Most of the players in the Italian squad are amateurs. So why would the Matildas players want to go there if they're not going to get paid?
Of course.
But, you know, if they wanted to play in Italy, they would be allowed to. It's not a thing. So, Tancredi, again, calma.
Yeah, big time calma, Tancredi. Let's go to Europe before we go back to our discussion of all things international football, more with Australia. Real Madrid, they have been busy. They've made some statements at the transfer table at the moment. Hazard, Jovic, headlining really what's been a massive coup of players at the moment. Are these transfers sort of going to help them get back to the top? Do you think that these are the transfers that do that? Or are you still a bit pessimistic at the moment?
I'm still sceptical about Jovic, to be honest.
He's still a bit too young at the moment?
He's a brilliant finisher, but you know he's a pure finisher and he needs that service, and they weren't creating enough chances.
But with Hazard coming in this season, that might change something.
That is a big one, obviously. I don't know where Madrid are getting all this money from. There was a story today in the English Telegraph about their accounts. Apparently, they're not exactly cash rich. They are strapped. But somehow, you know, just by sheer goodwill, you know, Madrid seem to get these deals.
Who knows?
Over the line. They get their money from somewhere. But, you know, they're definitely ambitious. I did enjoy the doctor's report that comes out after every one of these transfers saying, Jovic, what a specimen. He's the healthiest player in Madrid's history.
Oh, my goodness.
I think they got Donald Trump's doctor to deliver that one. But, I think there's some good moves there.
Militao, Ferton Mendy,
Yes. Eden Hazard is just a fantastic pickup. So they'll be back contending once again. They don't stay down for long, Madrid. They just don't. Doesn't happen.
Well, they've actually, just looking at some of the players that are back on their books next season, James Rodriguez and Mateo Kovacic haven't been signed permanently by Bayern Munich and Chelsea, and Chelsea obviously can't sign Kovacic on a permanent because they've got their own issues, and James is back. I think both of them will more than likely be off. I can't see both of them staying next season. I thought Kovacic was all right this season.
I mean, James has been playing well as well at Bayern.
Yeah,
but he's once you're out the door at Madrid, it doesn't tend to happen again for you.
They've got so many wingers now. Like, still got Vinicius Junior and Lucas Vazquez.
Oh, but James is a 10, though.
But they don't play with a 10. They play with that 4.
If you're going to play with a 10, you've got to play Isco.
Yeah, of course.
So, and Isco was sidelined way too much last season.
Will James want to sit on the bench and play second fiddle to Isco, the guy that he was starting ahead of previously?
If no one wants to spend the money on him, he might not have a choice.
That's a very good point. But then there's obviously as well the striker dilemma with Karim Benzema and Luka Jovic. But I think that they might go with Jovic from the start. I feel like that when you come with such a hefty price tag, you sort of got to justify it early. And if he's sitting on the bench to Karim Benzema, a player that they've been saying they need to replace for years, then I don't think that the Madrid fans are going to be too pleased.
Let's stay in Spain, Nick.
Yep.
Antoine Griezmann.
Oh, boy.
Pretty good source, being Atletico Madrid sporting director, saying he's going to Barcelona. I think that's pretty cut and dry.
Yeah, but then again, you hear rumours coming from the Sun saying that Manchester United are prepared to go all out.
Okay, the guy in charge of transfers at Atletico versus red top tabloid English newspaper.
Versus the fact that Barca may want Neymar back next season.
Ah, come on. Come on. He's got a serious injury and he's got these allegations surrounding him. It's not a good time to be spending money on Neymar.
It's Barcelona.
Griezmann is the player they need. Griezmann, I mean, people asked Simeone at the end of last season about, you know, who are you going to get to replace him if he leaves? And he's like, oh, yeah, easy. I'll find a player who scores loads of goals, creates loads of goals, and covers three quarters of the field with his intense work rate. Yeah, that's, you know, it's not going to happen. Mm. Barcelona could really use a player like that. And that last point, the work rate, absolutely crucial for them because Messi just doesn't have the runners around him to be able to wield his magic. He needs players who run beyond. He needs players who work hard and press because he can't do it himself. He can't or he won't. I'm not sure what the case is. But Suarez is getting older. Coutinho doesn't have the athletic capacity. And, you know, Busquets has never been an athletic player. So the way the game's going, they need a hard runner who's also going to be on the level technically. And Antoine Griezmann is that player.
Well, it came from the horse's mouth, what Antoine Griezmann said after their France's win against Andorra. He said that basically he doesn't know if his future is going to be in La Liga next season. He might just be looking to stir the pot a little bit and sort of drive up speculation about his future, see if maybe someone comes along and puts in a bit extra trying to potentially persuade him. Maybe PSG might look to come in. Obviously, the home ties might look to say, look, you want to come back and play at home in front of the big crowds, in front of you'll be the hero in France. But then again, I think Barcelona is looking very likely. Why would you go to Manchester United anyway? Why? They're playing Europa League next season. I don't see it happening unless there was some miracle and they're prepared to.
I'm a United fan. I can't even come up with a good argument.
Let's go back to the Australian discussion. Copa America and the Socceroos. It's happening, guys. 2020. It has thrown my plans to go to the Euros next year completely up in the air because I don't know what I'm going to do. But I've got to think about, you know, everything else that goes with it, going to the Copa America. But I love it. I love it, but the only thing I want to see is that Australia are playing not in the North Zone, they're playing in the South Zone. If they're playing in the North Zone, they're going to get smashed. I'm putting it bluntly. Have you seen the difference in teams in the North and South Zone?
Yeah, it's bonkers, isn't it?
Yeah. If they're in the South Zone, they actually have a chance to get through. But in the North Zone, see you later.
Yeah, it's kind of weird that they're playing at the Copa America. I mean,
well, it hasn't hit yet. Like, when, it hasn't really sunk in.
No. I mean, they obviously have invitational teams. I know Japan's played there a few times, Mexico and so forth. But it's us and Qatar, right?
Yeah.
I mean, CONMEBOL is a very strange confederation.
The odd couple, really.
Yeah, I think it's a great opportunity. You're not going to turn it down, are you?
No.
You're not going to turn it down. I think we might be completely shown up, especially like, even some of the smaller South American teams are pretty strong. And also, you know, they're in South America. There's some really inhospitable places to go to.
You could argue to say that when Australia played one of the smallest teams in South America in Peru, that was arguably the team that beat Australia by the most convincing margin, the most convincing on the ground in terms of the way they played was Peru at the World Cup.
I don't think we match up well with these sides.
No, well, I look at the North group. You're going to have to play either Brazil or Colombia or Ecuador, Peru and Venezuela.
I'm not expecting anything from this. I'm not expecting anything at all. I think it's just a good experience for the players. And, you know, if you've got the opportunity to play in a big tournament, competitive games against this caliber of opposition, you take it because it will be beneficial for the future. If they win a game, I'll be stunned.
South group, though, the only team that I think that they really can't beat is Uruguay because Uruguay will kill them. Like, just based off, I don't mean to be a Debbie Downer, but Uruguay's just that damn good with the players they've got. But Argentina, they have their own problems at the back, and so do Chile. Mm. Chile aren't the Chile of 2014 anymore either.
No.
So
Sanchez and Vidal are getting pretty...
And their centre-backs are still the same. It's still Gonzalo Hada and, what's his name again? Gary Medel. And they're not even centre-backs, and they still play Boussajour and that Mauricio Isla as their back four.
They're living in the past.
And
Chile.
Claudio Bravo is still their number one, but he's been injured for a season. He's probably nowhere near the goalkeeper he was back then. So, look, Paraguay and Bolivia, I reckon, are beatable.
Yeah,
Paraguay maybe. Don't have... Do they still have Oscar Cardozo and Roque Santa Cruz running around for them?
Look, I couldn't tell you.
And Nelson Haedo Valdez?
I mean, they're an okay team. I think Bolivia would be one you could beat. If you're not playing them at altitude, they're not a great side.
They've got... Okay, so this is who Paraguay's got. Oscar Cardozo still plays for them, apparently. Surprisingly enough, amazing. At 36. Gustavo Gomez, he was at Milan not long ago. He was labelled as a banter here at a signing. They got Miguel Almirón from Newcastle, their record signing.
He is a big player. I forgot he was Paraguayan.
And Juan Iturbe. Remember Iturbe?
He went to Bournemouth not too long ago, didn't he? It was a random signing.
He is now, Iturbe, is actually playing in Mexico for UNAM.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. So he's really fallen off. That sums it up. So if Australia get there, they get to the South group, they might be able to go through.
Let's look at Bolivia's squad just quickly. Everyone plays in the local league, apart from a couple of guys in Mexico.
Marcelo Martins.
A lot of them come from a team called The Strongest, which, I mean, is very intimidating. But then there's this guy, Marcelo Martins, from Xiazhuang Everbright.
He used to play for Wigan.
In China. He has a lot of caps for him. He used to be at Shakhtar Donetsk. He's got pedigree. He's 31. He's been at a million clubs. He's a guy you got to watch out for.
Yeah, well, that's one. I think they could definitely.
I think we could probably take Bolivia.
Yeah, come on. We've got to be something
optimistic. Got to back ourselves.
And they could potentially, if they don't concede and they just hit them on the counter against Argentina and Chile, there might be a chance. But anyways, let's stop potentially talking about all these permutations. I don't get too excited because then again, they are coming up against some of the best teams. Radoslav Majewski has signed for the Wanderers. Adrian Majewski trolled everyone who doesn't do their research, really, that doesn't know where he's playing, and said, how do you say the Polish league? I don't want to say in soccer for Ekstra Gaza, whatever its name is, to the A-League.
Everyone, you can go look it up. We're not even going to try.
He did the arrow, and it was like, oh, is Majewski coming back? There were rumours saying Melbourne.
No one bothers to look at his Wikipedia page. He's playing in China. He's Dalian Yifang.
And Radoslav Majewski. Now, you were saying, former Polish international, Nottingham Forest player. He's got a bit of pedigree coming to the Western City Wanderers.
Oh, yeah. He is a hell of a player. I think the underrated factor here is the Wanderers have really upped their social media and video content budget.
After Daniel Lopper's video.
Catching a cross and taking a goal kick wasn't the most inspiring highlight reel. This is spectacular. Goals left, right and centre, assists, volleys, split screen. Well done to the Wanderers for upping their social media team's
game. Well, now
they've
got four players that have been signed under the cap that are internationals now. So they're almost at the peak level. Unless Georgievski counts, that's five.
No, he's got Australian citizenship.
So he's all good?
He's all good, even though he played for Macedonia. Majewski is going to be a fantastic pickup for them. I think he will do well in this league. He's only 32, still at that age where he can be effective. I think it's a fantastic signing. He has serious pedigree. It's not like he had a dalliance in the championship. He played over 100 games
for
Nottingham
Forest.
Well,
he's still got it.
And he was a fan favourite. I think if Majewski's excited about him coming, his mate, then I am too. I think he might have a similar impact. Fantastic signing for the Wanderers.
Well, they've got as well Primo Schwelger, the other Swiss midfielder who's also a former Swiss international, went to the 2010 World Cup. He played for Hannover.
He's more of a defensive player, I believe.
So, you know, that's actually a good little bit of balance.
That's some pedigree.
And Keanu Backus as well, who had quite a good season last year.
These Central Eastern European guys tend to do well in the A-League.
Yeah.
A lot of the South Americans, they're either top or they flop. You know, some of the Western Europeans, a lot of them we've seen a lot of washed up ones and a lot of good ones as well. But generally the hit rate from Eastern Europe, you think of your Croatian, Serbian, you know, Ninkovic, Dimitrijevic, you know, Gabesa, Berisha, Mijajevski, all these guys, they tend to do well. I don't know what it is, but, you know, they maybe just got that hunger. And I think Majewski should be a good player.
Just quickly before we move on, because we actually had in the last few minutes, the ladies league actually called us out, Josh.
Oh, yeah?
They said the crying laughing emojis. Lads want to take this to the car park, Barisha style.
if you can release an episode of Talking Tildes on time, then we can talk.
I said restream, like this whole render. I understand it's pre-recorded. Like we know the difficulties of pre-recorded.
Post-production.
We'll talk about that a little bit later, but. Just wait. Talking Tildes, look, we'll talk about you guys a little bit later. Tune in and we'll have a discussion about that. Melbourne Knights. Wow. Josh, you were there.
Come on.
They were unbelievable. They've got a bit of a run going at the moment. They're through to the round of 32 of the FFA Cup. So exciting. Is it time for them to bring a proper manager in, though?
Well, I don't think they need to.
Well, if it's going well, what's the point?
Yeah, if it's not fixed... You know, if it's not broke, don't fix it.
Yeah.
Marijan Cvitković is doing a fantastic job. He's sort of taking himself out of the team most of the time. He's playing manager on the sideline. He's obviously got a good relationship with the group. He's a leader. And that was their best performance all season against South Melbourne. They were very threatening every time they went forward. Fantastic display up front from Hamish Watson. Caleb Mikulic, the new pickup, looks fantastic. So does Mohamed Awad. They've really strengthened. So I think... they're on a good run, and until it dips, I don't think they need to bring in anyone.
What's the point?
I would just ride it out with Marijan Cvitković until the end of the season because they're on form. If it dips, if you need a proper manager in there, you need Marijan back on the park because it's pretty hard to play and manage at the same time, then maybe you do that. But I think at the moment it's working, so you know, don't change it.
Yeah, I don't think – what's the point? Wait till the end of the season. If it's working – they can get them all the way to potentially going deep in the FFA Cup or
sensation atmosphere. Yeah. Imagine if Melbourne Victory get drawn away at Summer Street. Ooh, that would be sensational. It was my first time over at Knights Stadium. Never been able to make it to the West before, but what an introduction!
Yeah.
Fantastic crowd, sensational atmosphere. The celebrations afterwards were immense, and this squad it seems really together, which is what I got. I mean, they all came out and ate and, you know, drank a little bit as well, not too much, with the fans after the game. there's just such a good spirit in that group. And I think Melbourne Knights can do something special this season. I don't know what that is, but I think, you know, they will make the finals. They should be pushing for top three, top four finish in NPL Victoria. And this cup run, they always tend to do well in the cups, Melbourne Knights. I think onto the national stage is a fair reward for their efforts.
Got a question. Do Western United play an FFA Cup?
No, they don't. Okay. Not this season.
Because how about that? Western Derby straight up. Imagine Western United's first ever game as their FA Cup game against Melbourne Knights.
And they've been given a little bit extra time to prepare. So also the numbers don't quite work
fair
out.
Enough.
I think in future, it might be the team that finishes bottom of the ladder in the A-League that doesn't qualify for the FFA
Cup.
That's been a suggested thing. It's not confirmed yet, but I think that works well because I don't want to limit the opportunities for the NPL teams. Mm. However, the rigged draw system to get an NPL team to the semi-finals, I think it's time to get rid of that one.
Yeah.
Because if you want it to be taken seriously, you can't be, you know, you can't be having a slanted draw.
100%. And this guy, he's going to be on the radar of A-League clubs once again. Hamish Watson, I think he's the best striker in NPL Victoria alongside Liam Boland.
Mm.
I mean, he's at the top two. I think that they both should be targeted by A-League clubs.
I think James Brown is the top scorer this season.
James Brown, yeah. What about James Brown for a while? You forget, like he was. I remember back in the Gold Coast United days, he had some good performances when he was young.
He's a good player.
He had some injuries, but he's still.
He's not an out and out. He's not an out and out nine. They've brought in George Howard so he can play off him, but he's a 10 or a wide player who's just been in prolific form this season, top scorer in the league. I think Boland might have just overtaken him with that hat trick last weekend, but you know he's definitely in the discussion. I think Hamish Watson is the informed striker though.
Yeah.
And that hat-trick was immense. One of them was a gimme, of course, but there were two fantastic finishes. That goal cutting inside from the left and firing in low, there was so much power on that. And you didn't really get that on the stream and on the highlights, how just fast and intense that contest was. Both teams hugely fired up for it. And Hamish Watson, you know, he was channeling the spirit of the crowd. He was right. He was just pumping everybody up. The whole team was getting around him. He is quite a player, and I think eventually he'll get another shot in the A-League.
Well, I think there's a lot of clubs that could do with a player like him. Yeah. I reckon there's teams that could even do with him as that
bustling
sort of
target
player.
Man. Yeah. He can turn an average side into a good one.
Yeah, there's a lot of teams. I'm telling you, like that, they would be crying out for a striker just like that. And I think that a guy like him or Liam Boland should be looked at. He could even go back to Wellington again. They've lost David Williams. They've lost Roy Krischer. They're going to need strikers. Hamish Watson could potentially be on his way back for what would be actually stint number four. If he goes back to the Wellington Phoenix. But he's a New Zealand boy. He's only 26, so he's got a lot of football still ahead of him. He might, you know, look, you know what? Like, I don't want to be too optimistic, but could he still play for the national team? Like, seriously, they got Chris Wood.
I don't think it's out of the question that he could be in the squad.
Like, he could, if he's playing well enough, surely he'd get called up to some qualifiers.
I mean, you probably have to be in a professional side to get called up. So he probably does have to get back to the Phoenix or whoever will take him. I don't know how far he is off a citizenship. But I think he's a fair shout in the future. Yeah.
Let's go back to Europe, Josh. Frank Lampard, apparently it's what I call the dreaded scenario, is that Sarri leaves and Lampard comes into Chelsea. I spoke about this last week and I said this is an absolute shocking move and I stand by it. Terrible move. You can't, no. As I say, club legends going back to the club when they aren't proven managers yet, it infuriates me. I feel like he's only been picked because he's the most convenient scenario possible. They haven't actually dipped their toes in and looked deeper. And they've gone for a guy like Frank Lampard, who I think he still needs more time. He had one season at Derby. And don't get me wrong, great season. They didn't get promoted. They did ultimately fall short. I'm not a fan. That is 10 steps back. And considering he's taking on a new squad, doesn't know anything about next season. And the fact that Chelsea haven't done enough to try and keep Sarri there, who would probably do okay next season considering they can't buy anyone because he knows exactly who he's got. And he knows there's some of those players who are coming back. It doesn't sit well with me. And I worry about Chelsea next season.
No, that's fair. That's fair. I think he's working with reduced expectations because of the transfer ban. And also he carries with him a certain goodwill. Obviously, his assistant coach, Jody Taylor, I think it is. Not Jody Taylor. That's the England women's player. Anyway, Jody Morris. Yeah. Anyway, is obviously very a lot more experienced than he is. So he's got a safe pair of hands alongside him. I don't think it's the worst thing in the world. I think Chelsea fans, they have a bit of the cult of personality thing going on at that club, and I think they'll get around him no matter how it goes next season, just because of the circumstances. Performances under Sarri that were, you know, decried as underperforming, you know, less impressive results under Frank Lampard, you know, will probably be lauded. So that's just the mentality of the Chelsea fan base is a little bit twisted.
Looped.
But I think he'll tap into the mentality of the club. They, you know, they used to be a team back in the day before the Abramovich takeover that played fancy football and didn't win anything. Then they got a taste of it under Jose Mourinho, and they really don't care about the aesthetics anymore. They just want to win games. And I think Frank Lampard will play into that pragmatic sense of get results, don't care how. So, you know, I don't think it's the worst appointment in the world, but I think it's slightly premature given he's only had one season.
Well, I worry about Chelsea next season because losing Hazard and not necessarily having a player that's coming in to replace him at anywhere near the calibre.
It's an expectations game.
It's an expectations game. And
my point is that it will drop off.
Yeah.
Everybody knows it's going to drop off.
But will
off.
Chelsea fans be just optimistic of just getting the top four next season?
I think they'll be more than satisfied with that if they do.
But
they
Chelsea fans deep down have this feeling of they want to win the league.
But it's Frankie Lampard, though. It's an emotional return for one of their heroes. I don't think they're going to demand that much from him. So it's an expectations game. I don't think it's the best appointment in the world, but given the circumstances they're facing, having a club legend in charge is probably the kind of goodwill that they need.
Let's move on. Postecoglou to Greece. I like it. I think it needs to happen. Greece are a basket case at the moment. They were shocking on the weekend against Italy, and they lost against Armenia at home. It's the same old feeling of every qualification campaign that's happened since 2014. They're in a position right now where they do need a new manager to come in, and it seems like it's almost a bit of a revolving door, but Ange knows the Greek environment. He speaks Greek as well. So it fits into the, if they want to get someone in that's actually Greek, because obviously most nationalities don't like moving away too much from someone who's not necessarily not familiar with the surroundings. I'm all for it. Make it happen.
This is never going to happen in a million years. Are you serious?
You don't think Ange is going to go to Greece?
No. This rumor has originated from somebody on a Facebook page in Australia. As far as I can tell, I haven't been able to track down any, you know, reputable sources that are actually or people that are behind this rumor. Why would he go there? He's got a cushy job at Yokohama. He's doing well. They're on a run of form. He's playing nice football in the J-League. Why would he go to this basket case organisation if he thinks the criticism in Australia was too over the top? What about Greece?
Yeah, he's not going to cop it just from
Greece.
If
he thinks FFA are a chaotic organisation with, you know, very few rational strategies in place, what about the Greek Federation?
Well, not just the Greek Federation, but think about the Greeks just in general, not just in Greece, but also here in Australia. He's going to cop it. So, look, in my opinion...
The players don't match up with his philosophy either. They are the armoured tortoise of international
football. The problem is they're still conceding goals, mate, and they've got supposedly a great defence.
He's just totally incompatible. Apart from the fact that he is of Greek extraction and he speaks the language, his mentality is totally incompatible with the country.
Could he change it up?
I think...
Roberto Mancini doesn't...
It would be a revolution. I just don't think they have the players to achieve what he'd want, and I really don't think
optimistic Greeks out there that were hoping they could get to the
It's not going
to
happen. I'm sorry. It's just not going to happen. I mean, I'd love to see it. It'd be very interesting, but it's just not going to happen.
One can only hope. Because in terms of this, I want to see an Australian manager coach in Europe, like in this sort of big level as well. Like, I reckon it'd be almost a feather in the cap, but I think eventually, hopefully one day, it could happen. Ange to Greece. Maybe not straight away, I want it to happen. France were up and down in the qualifiers. They lost against Turkey. Then they came out and smashed Andorra. Are we at all concerned about that, or is that just a little speed bump?
France will do well against the big teams because they're an elite counter-attacking side. They started off the World Cup very unconvincingly, barely beat Australia with a VAR call that still rankles. They drew with Denmark, and they only just got over Peru. So... against the smaller sides, the mid-tier sides will put up a defensive wall against them. They just don't really have that much functionality in midfield. They don't have that much creativity against a set defence. But as soon as you play against a big team that's actually going to have a go and attack you, they're lightning away on the counter-attack. Mbappe, say no more. So I think this is par for the course for France. They'll chug along through the qualifiers in an unconvincing manner. They might lose a few games here and there. Against the Minnows, they'll still be good enough to roll over them. But against the big teams, that's when Didier Deschamps and his negative football starts to shine and the reactionary tactics end up being effective. I hated seeing them win the World Cup with that kind of style of play, yeah. But it works.
Well, and they've got a very easy group at the end of the day. Like, other than the fact they Turkey is probably this, and Iceland are the two teams that are the next best in line in terms of who would actually be able to contend with them or actually put a bit of a fight, because the rest are all minnows, Moldova, Albania, Andorra. So you want to be winning those games at least. I think going to Turkey and losing 2-0, like, I've seen highlights, they weren't very great. I think that it's, at the end of the day, though, it is still early in qualifying. I think that they'll bounce back and probably still top this group. Serbia sacked their coach this morning. There was a bit of a mutual termination. They smashed Lithuania, but they lost 5-0 to the Ukraine before that. It was an unbelievable, like, little change of what's happened with Serbia in a matter of days, of how they came out and got smacked by a Ukraine team, which are almost on the way back up under Andrei Shevchenko as the new manager. Now, that's an example of a guy who comes in and might rejuvenate by pulling on the heartstrings. I think that this might have been a bit... It's a hard thing to take. But then again, though, I think Serbian football, like, I think after what was a promising World Cup, which probably fell a little bit short, I think that the expectations have sort of gone up a bit, that they would want to get big wins. But to lose 5-0 against the Ukraine, you have to be at all concerned.
I think there has to be a change. I mean, 5-0 against the Ukraine is just not acceptable. They've got a great group of players.
When you've got bloody Mitrovic and Jovic up front as well, you've still got enough quality to
be beating most teams. You've got Kostic, Kolarov, Milenkovic in defence, yeah. Is a terrific
Sergei
player.
Sergei Milenkovic, Savic.
I mean, you know, you got SMS. Yeah. You got to be doing better than that. So,
well, he didn't play.
He didn't play, but still, like, the World Cup was a disappointment for me. I think they should have got through that group, and they didn't do it. I thought they kind of choked a little bit, and the mentality of the team was off. And obviously, they were unlucky with a penalty non-call against them against Switzerland. But they had the coach out on social media, like, crying conspiracy. And that's what's wrong with Serbian football.
There you go.
They have to take a good long look at themselves and see what they can change, rather than just blaming on outside forces all the time. They've got to reevaluate, you know, how they come to these decisions, because they've got the talent and they need to be doing better. Yeah. I think a coaching change is probably necessary.
Mladen Krstić was the old manager.
Krstić.
He was obviously usurped at the end of the day. He only coached 19 games for them. 9 wins, 5 draws, 5 losses. So,
I mean, football in the Balkans is not exactly a stable job.
No, not at all.
So
not at all.
I think he was probably expecting to get the cut after the Ukraine result, and it just took a little bit longer than they thought.
Tomorrow another tournament kicks off. Copa America. I'm excited. I love the Copa America. We're talking about, obviously, the next one, the 2021, but the 2019 one kicks off. Unbelievable. Happens almost every year, this tournament. The team that I'm most looking forward to watching is Uruguay. I love Uruguay. I reckon that they are such an underperforming team for the amount of talent they have, because I reckon there's enough quality in that team to win a World Cup. Like, what they've got from defence all the way through to their attack. Maybe depth-wise there's a few problems, but you know what? They could definitely cause some damage, and I reckon they could definitely win this whole tournament.
Personally, I can't wait to see what Qatar brings to the table. No, just kidding. It's Argentina. It's always Argentina. But it's always been Argentina.
Is there still the same pool as there once was, because of they don't have the quality around the ground as they once did?
It's going to be another, you know, historic failure, and I'm here for it. It's just, I love the drama. Lionel Messi can't catch a break.
So you spoke about Brazilian tears. What about Argentinian tears?
Oh, don't cry for me. Come on.
Good one. Yeah, look, Colombia as well.
I do like watching Colombia. Yeah, yeah. They're an entertaining proposition. They probably need to move on from Falcao finally as a striker. They're a little bit disappointing for mine at the World Cup in that loss to England. I think they lent too much into thuggery and not enough into their actual footballing ability, which is always the downfall of some of these South American sides, especially Colombia. But Argentina is always going to be the big story. It's Leo Messi. Can he finally do it? He won't. He'll all be blamed on him, even though he's the only one pulling his weight in the team, and so on and so forth. But it's always an entertaining watch, and especially if Diego Maradona's in the stands having, you know, a heart attack, then, well, hopefully not, you know.
That's a bit rough.
Yeah, no, I didn't mean literally. Leo Messi, Argentina, that's always what my eye's on.
I'm looking at this Chile squad at the moment. We talk about old. This is old. Bersajor, 35. Fuenziada, I think I said that correctly, 34. Hada, 33. Hernandez, 32. Vidal, 32. Vidal, 31. Arias, Fernandez, Isla, 31. Sanchez and Aranguiz, 30. Vargas, 29. Eddie Vargas is only 29
Japan to beat
old.
Chile.
That's my Japan's got a bunch of young kids out there, so they're going to be fired up and they'll be wanting to, looking with a point to prove. I want to see, there's one guy that I loved at the World Cup from Peru, Luis Advíncula.
Yes.
If he can have a big game, I'll watch Peru games simply to see him bombing down the wing as a right back.
The Peruvian Dani Alves.
Oh, mate, he's a gun.
He's good fun.
And I'm hoping that we see a bit of Lucas Paqueta magic at this tournament, just pulling on the AC Milan heartstrings, but I reckon he'll be a play to watch.
Do you think he'll even start?
Nah, he'll come off the bench, but he might get an opportunity in some games.
It'll be fun to see. I think he's a big one for the future.
Frank Ribery to Sheffield United. I'm all for it, but I don't think it's going
to
happen.
from Salt Bay to Sean Bean.
Look, it's
not Ribery is coming. No, he's not actually coming. He's not going to Sheffield United.
He's
going to
play under Chris Wilder. Imagine him in the centre-back overlapping in the centre-back overlapping system that they play. Imagine that. He would get lost. Like, that for me even confuses me. And even with the amazing IQ of football.
Guys, can I just deliver a message to the European tabloids? I know you have to fill pages, but there's a Women's World Cup on. There's a Copa America. You don't have to start these absolute frivolous rumours. I'm Ribery to Sheffield United. Give me a break.
I think their quota of players, like, they have to meet criteria, and every single player in their squad at the moment is either English, Scottish, Welsh, Irish, or Northern Irish.
I would love to see it. I would pay to see it. Just, I want the fly on the wall documentary of Ribery inside Chris Wilder's dressing room.
Look, I don't know if I can't see this happening. But if it does, how great would it be just for the entertainment factor? That's the whole point.
What do you think Chris Wilder would think of Ribery's gold-covered steaks?
I don't know if he'd be a fan. I think he'd be looking like I don't see Chris Wilder as the type to be. I see him as the type to eat an extremely rare steak that'd be looking straight from the buddy pub. I don't think he'd be looking for those sort of like fancy.
I think he's more of a
ones.
Black pudding man myself.
Probably. Not even shocked. Let's go back to Australia really quick. We've got 9 minutes to go. We've still got a lot to cover. South Melbourne v Avondale tonight.
Sunday.
Big game. Can they bounce back and get a win against the Avengers?
They didn't even stick around for the post-game meal at Knight Stadium.
Yeah, the
South
table was left empty.
Bit poor form from them. Little bit of Salt Bay there.
Yeah, just a bit.
I think it was a tough result to take, but they have been in good form. They should be able to put up a fight. They have a terrible record against Avondale. Mm. At Lakeside especially, they always lose. I don't think it's going to change. 3-1 to Avondale for mine. Avondale coming back into form. They got it done against Kingston with 10 men. They still won 3-1. I think I'm going for the same scoreline here. Liam Boland will be a little bit too much for their centre-back partnership, which I have questions about.
Yeah, I think Avondale are going to come back and they're going to get a big win over South Melbourne. They're showing some shaky signs at the back, I think, and I just reckon that Liam Boland, the form he's in at the moment, they're going to get themselves a big win. And as you did say, the record doesn't lie.
What is it with Nikola Raganovic of either having an absolute blinder or a complete disaster?
It's Jekyll or Hyde with him almost. Yeah. It's like it depends which side of the bed he wakes up on almost.
You know, in the old Football Manager, he would have 20 out of 20 in eccentricity, right?
Probably.
He's just one of those crazy keepers. But he pulled off two of the most amazing saves I've ever seen in one game against Bentley when I was commentating. Mm. And then he does that against Knights. Wasn't entirely his fault, but my God, what a disaster.
Believe you're going to be out again this weekend?
I will be. I'll be out tonight with FNR's own Mickey Ferraro in the co-commentary chair. Moreland Derby tonight. CB Smith Reserve, 8:30 p.m. kickoff. That's a nice late one over in Faulkner. Big game. Who takes away the spoils for you? City versus Zebras.
My heartstrings are still very much Moreland City.
A lot of heartstrings going on today, Nick.
It's a passionate show today. We just say it's going to be one of the best. Third versus fifth. Moreland City won the derby last year, and I had the luck of commentating that game, and that was a 3-2 win, and it was an absolute enthralling affair. Bigger Piacuno, tell you
Jesse
what.
Jesse Macaroonis.
Yeah, there was a guy, I don't know if he still plays Moreland City, Lissandro Paz scored this unbelievable flick goal. They had a guy for Zebras called Tiziano Slongo, scored this volley. He was a centre-back. It was one of the best volleys I've seen. It was almost Lorenzo Insigne-like. Wow. And then Moreland Zebras had a chance on the goal line to win, to get a late point, and then it was cleared off the line twice, and it was just drama filled. Rashid Mahazi was playing that game. Jake Barker-Daish, Christopher Cristaldo. It was a who's who of A-League folklore. And I think Mourne Zebras are going to win this one, but just based off being at home, and I just think they're going to be too good. But Jesse Makarunas is back for Moreland City, so I think that's a massive plus for them. But it'll be a really close game.
I was impressed with Moreland Zebras against Langwarrin when I went out to see them. They won 3-1, and they had four or five players out with food poisoning. So, wow. I mean, that's impressive, knocking off the top team in the East. When you're that shorthanded, they've got a big Nico Niagordian up front, the gigantic target man, and then there's Thomas Bartholos off the left flank. He's a very skillful player. Obviously didn't see the full first team in action, but I agree. Although Moreland City are in good form. They have have been on a good run recently.
The squad hasn't changed too much as well from last year. And with having Makarunas in there with the Paiakuno in that attacking setup, it's very dangerous. They've got a lot of weapons.
I think it's guaranteed for goals. I mean, if you look at Moreland City, I think they've won their last three games quite convincingly. They knocked off Northcote City 4-1. They beat Goulburn Valley Suns, who are in actually pretty good shape this season, whereas Zebras only got a draw with them. And they also put five past Springvale White Eagles away from home. So Moreland are in great form. I think Zebras probably have the strongest squad and they're higher on the table. I'm going for I think it's going to be a good game. I'm going for a 3-2 win for the Zebras.
I like it. Before we get to the real extravagant questions, let's keep this one brief. We saw the EPL fixtures out. Opening day, I'm excited. There's some big fixtures. United-Chelsea in particular is going to be interesting to see where both teams are at by that point in time. Liverpool Norwich always has an interesting connotation of Luis Suarez having an absolute belter of a day, but he's not there anymore. And last time Liverpool played Norwich on the opening day, they went on to win the league.
Mm.
So Liverpool fans, get excited!
I think it's definitely their year.
It's two more months away, Josh, but it's going to be, I think, a really enthralling opening day. And when is it not? There's always some big games happening all around the country, and Athos Syriano was up and about because he got his prediction right that West Ham will play Man City on the opening day. And I'll tell you what, it's not something you want. They're going to get absolutely smacked.
West Ham always start the season awfully, don't they? And then they have to have a rescue job by Christmas and then new manager in charge.
I don't think Pellegrini's going anywhere, though. That's my view on that. Now, today, NBA Finals happened, Josh. We saw Game 6. Kawhi, KD and Clay all potentially are done after today. I was rooting for the Warriors. I'm not a bandwagon in any sense. I go for the bloody Miami Heat of all teams, right? Now, this in particular,
not one.
Yeah, look, not two. Not two. Not three. Well, it was only two in the end. They bottled two other ones. Kawhi had, like, I think Stephen Curry completely just switched off in the last quarter. Klay going down, I think, was the catalyst because he was playing so well before his suspected ACL injury. Kawhi stays the Raptors for me. I think he's going to go on. I think that was the key. He'll sign a long-term deal. But I think KD and Clay won't be playing at all next season, and the Warriors are going to crumble. And the last thing I wanted was Drake celebrating the NBA Finals victory, because if they didn't win, I wouldn't be surprised if he's out wearing a Golden State jersey next season out the new ground they've got out in Oakland.
I'm surprised he doesn't turn up in a half and half.
Yeah, probably. Not even surprised.
Drake curse broken, sort of.
Not yet.
Not quite.
Not yet.
Yeah, look, I think Kawhi... he's got to stay, doesn't he?
He has to now. He can't go now.
But he did say after the game, it's something for them to build on.
How much more can you build on that?
Something for them
to build on. Almost like he came in on like a rent.
He's like a gun for hire. You never know what's going on in Kawhi Leonard's head. I wouldn't try. I mean, he's a weird bloke.
We had the sting ready of his laugh. But unfortunately, we'll have to
get that one ready for next week.
100%. Let's go to Nellie Oa, Josh, I reckon, because we're running out of time.
Yep.
Now, that, for me...
It's definitely important to cover.
Oh, my God. Nellie Oa. What's going on, mate? Like, he rocks up in North Korean Kim Jong-un fashion with all the security, with the Rolls Royce, says it came from his good friend...
Mick Gatto.
Out of all people. Comes in, you know, rocks up to court. Mick Gatto says he has no idea. He's never met the guy before, apparently. That's what came the Seb Casella report on Channel 9. Then we find out he's just a factory worker in Ballarat. So another
and
level
he's got
to
six hired actors.
Yeah. This is peak Nellie Oa to another level that it turns out at the end of the day, he was just a factory worker.
Well, I can't say I'm surprised. I mean, he was playing for Sebastopol Vikings reserves.
Yeah.
Look, Nellie, he's a showman, obviously. I think he's got some sort of... gross need for attention.
Yeah, well,
and
apparently
we're indulging that at this point in time. Look, we've had our fun, but you know, it was an amusing stunt. I'm just looking forward to seeing him make his debut in the next season of Underbelly.
and the Ballinelli Yoa. Last one, we mentioned about TLL. All I'm saying is, guys, get your stuff together. I'm not going to say the exact word that starts with S, but guys, come on. Rendering, yes. Post-production, yes. We do a show that, we do pre-production stuff for that as well, and I understand the things of it. There's certain tactics you got to have in place to make sure it gets out on time. So I don't know what it is. Maybe it's your software. It might be Premiere. Are they exporting it in the right way? We export as in what, the H.264, whatever it is.
That's the one.
And they do all those little cheeky advertisements now in there. Look, keep it simple, guys. Doing a great job. Must say, I'm really enjoying it. But I want it out on time. I don't want it out when I'm about to go to bed.
I would like to know when it's going to be released.
Yeah.
That would be fun.
8 p.m. That's when I want to see it released.
You know, you've got an audience with the expectations. You've got to meet these deadlines, guys. I mean,
we will keep calling you out until you get it out at 8 p.m. You've heard it here first.
Great show, though.
Great job. All the guys there, Christina, Nick, Rose, Michelle, doing a great job, and keep up the great work, but we just want it out on time. But Josh, I believe it's time for us to go.
It is. Stick around for evenings here on FNR. We'll be chatting to Thomas Deng, who's part of a new anti-domestic violence initiative, which is really good to see. We've also got full wrap of all the Women's World Cup results, including another deep dive into the Matildas. So make sure you stick around for evenings on FNR. But for myself and Nick Dabano on the Lightning Round, it's goodbye for now.
It's time for the Lightning Round on FNR, Football Nation Radio.